At the United Nations today, a new low in the United States' relations with the 14 other members of the Security Council. Canada led a chorus of criticism of U.S. policy, specifically the U.S. demand for immunity for American peacekeepers from the new International War Crimes Tribunal. Washington has threatened to shut down all U.N. peacekeeping missions if that demand isn't met. Canada and 13 other countries argue today that no peacekeepers should be above the law. Only India sided with the U.S.
Washington's opposition to the International Criminal Court and the spillover threat to U.N. peacekeeping operations illustrate an observation by two political scientists writing in the July-August issue of Foreign Affairs. They write, "The sources of American strength are so varied and so durable that U.S. foreign policy today operates in the realm of choice rather than necessity to a greater degree than any other power in modern history." That's according to Stephen Brooks and Bill Wolforth, both of Dartmouth College, who join us now from Hanover, New Hampshire. Welcome to the program, gentlemen.
Glad to be here.
You write that contrary to what advocates of U.S. moderation may say, the U.S. really can do largely what it wants. I wonder, first, Stephen Brooks, what exactly is the measure of U.S. strength that makes that so?
Well, I think if you look at the main components of power, first, military. In the military realm, the United States spends more than the next 15 largest spenders combined. And that's just a level of spending which dwarfs the next series of countries to a greater degree than ever before in history. Economically, the second main component of power, the United States is twice as large as the next largest country. And then technologically, the United States spends more on technological development than many of the largest countries combined.
Let's assume then that the U.S. can indeed, in many instances, operate in the world stage without constraint. Should it operate without taking into account the objections of other countries that are, as you would argue, far, far less powerful and unable to prevent the U.S. from doing so? Bill Wolforth.
Well, we believe that the United States can do so, and sometimes it probably has to, but it shouldn't always do so. The problem is that the temptation to act unilaterally is always present. The costs of doing so only accrue over the long term as you slowly corrode relationships that you might have to draw on in the future if you face another crisis. So we think that frequently the best policy for a country in this, you know, overwhelmingly strong position is to act benignly and to be seen to be acting benignly where it can.
How long do you think this power, this unilateral power, will exist? You write about American primacy in perspective. How long do you think the era of American primacy is going to last?
Based on everything we know, it looks likely to last several decades more. It's highly unlikely that another country is going to rise up to present to the United States the kind of challenge that the Soviet Union did. Sure, there will be changes, but you're not going to see the rise of a peer state to the United States over that period.
I wonder whether either of you, in looking at this question, has come by any nostalgia for the days of the Cold War. I can recall as a teenager the days when one argument for a national health service in the U.S. was, they have good health care in the Soviet Union and we can't be shamed into not having any here, or we have to end segregation in the South or we'll lose Africa to the Soviets. You're describing a world almost without any such external incentive to U.S. behavior.
I think you've really hit on something there, namely that people in the United States are used to those kinds of arguments, that we have to do something because some huge external power is bearing down on us and we need to change this or that practice. And we're just getting used to a world in which those kinds of arguments don't work anymore. And so people who oppose U.S. unilateralist actions are often compelled to exaggerate the likelihood that other states are going to gang up on us militarily in order to argue for restraint. And what Steve and I are arguing is, hey, now it's time for people who support restraint in U.S. foreign policy or magnanimity in U.S. foreign policy to recognize and base those arguments on strength rather than on an imagined weakness.
But before you go, I'd just like to hear from both of you a bit of speculation, actually, or your estimate of where we stand politically as a country. As you write, the United States is capable of, to a great extent, ignoring what the rest of the world wants it to do. But you say there are many, many important reasons for the U.S. to do what the rest of the world wants the United States to do, and reasons that might accrue in the end to American interest. Do you think that the U.S. right now politically is capable of following that logic, or do you think it's more likely to be tempted by the power it has to act without constraint. Bill Wolforth?
There's always hope. In fact, I think the United States has stepped forward and acted with real leadership in the past. I think there are few people in the world who would question that the United States is serving not only its own interests when it goes after terrorists in Afghanistan, but the likelihood is that it will always be imperfect. The U.S. president will always be tempted by domestic interests. Short-term solutions will always be appealing for a country in this position, and that's why you need people out there to constantly remind the United States that true leadership inheres in looking at the long term.
I would agree, and that I think the main cost of the United States acting in an aggressively unilateral fashion is in the long term. And what that means is that only by adopting a long-term attitude is it likely that the United States will not act frequently in an aggressively unilateral fashion.
Well, thanks to both of you for talking with us today.
Thank you.
Stephen Brooks and Bill Wolforth, both political scientists at Dartmouth College, and co-authors of the article American Primacy in Perspective in the July-August issue of Foreign Affairs.